Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the blind and partially sighted community's opportunity to check in with the world of technology. And of course, this programme is all about you and your relationship with technology. How's it going? What's working well? What's posing a bit of a challenge? We'd really love to hear about all of that. You can contact us in the usual way via email or a voice note. You can send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing all about the changes that are coming up to make TV and radio broadcasts even more accessible. We'll have the second part of our interview with Aidan Foreman, RNIB's Director of Technology. And we'll find out about the latest product line to feature the NaviLens technology. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk. A very warm welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, and welcome back to Tasneem Arshad. Tasneem, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. It's really good to be back. I've been away observing Ramadan, and now that's over, it's really wonderful to be back.
And have you been using any technology?
Well, during Ramadan, not massively. Kind of YouTube, iPhone, so nothing kind of unusual in that respect. The focus is much more on kind of spiritual growth. So, yeah.
Very important to take time away from technology. Callum Stoneman, I know you were away recently as well, but what's on your technology radar just now?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, good to have you back, Tasneem. No, to be fair, it is quite nice. A little tech switch off sometimes, but I've been doing the opposite. This week, we did the Mastodon demo a few months ago, if you remember. And I've got to be honest, I haven't really touched it since I recorded that demo, but I've been sort of just having another play around with that more recently. I've kind of gone back to it because more and more people are moving over there. I mean, it seems to go in phases, doesn't it? But it seems to be picking up again, you know, the talk about it. So I've just thought, right, I really should get on this and really see what it's about and try and get my head around it.
And how's that going?
Not bad. I think, you know, second time around, I am actually starting to work it out. And I am starting to quite enjoy it. There is definitely a nice little community on there, certainly of other blind and partially sighted people.
Yeah, I think two things I like about Mastodon as a social media platform. One is they're does seem to be a bit of an effort to describe images, you know, to put those alt tags on.
Yes, the alt text. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that does seem to be in the kind of the culture on Mastodon. The other thing that is a kind of a feature of Mastodon is the idea of a content warning. So sometimes abbreviated to CW. And so if there is content on there that's, you know, maybe going to be slightly offensive or triggering, then it does seem to be the case that many, you know, not exclusively, but many of the people on there will put that content warning in place. So that might be a useful signpost for some people. But of course, there are lots of communities online where blind and partially sighted people are, and often if you want to learn to do something new, the best way can be to find out by asking another blind or partially sighted person. And I think in the UK particularly, we do seem to have quite a large community on Facebook. You know, we've got the RNIB Connect groups, of course, there's VI Talk, there's Blind in the UK, and then we know that blind and partially sighted people are using what might be considered the slightly more visual platforms like Instagram and TikTok. So we're really across the piece, Callum.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, we're getting our voice out there, which is important. And the difficulty with social media, I think, particularly with Mastodon, is there is a high number of blind and partially sighted people on there, definitely, especially since all the changes at Twitter that kind of... I mean, Mastodon was around before this, but the changes at Twitter really started this... you know, this trend, I guess, of people moving over there, which is fantastic. But at the same time, it's still not reaching the masses that, you know, Facebook and Twitter, even still, and Instagram and TikTok. It's not quite at that level, which I think is just where the difficulty comes in for some people, you know, because you might not want to live in a sort of blind community all the time, which I think Mastodon, you could maybe fall into that trap a little bit, especially if you go on one of the more VI-specific instances.
Well, what I've found is that it tends to be the slightly geekier people. You know, I haven't heard Mastodon mentioned very much in mainstream media outside of, you know, tech publications. Tasneem, let's bring you in. You don't really use social media very much. Is there a specific reason for that? Are you just too busy? Does it not appeal to you? Do you worry about it?
I definitely don't worry about it, but I guess it is more of a time factor for me, and I'm very much a people's person, so I like to, kind of do all of my socializing in person and WhatsApp and whatnot. But I think if I could have some protected time to run through some social media time, either independently or some training, then potentially I might actually do a little bit more of it. But I've never been one for kind of posting my life, and I feel that's more of a private thing for me. And obviously, that's kind of social media is much more public, and I know that you can only allow friends and family to look at things, but I guess it's not really for me, to be fair. But I do love the resourcing of, being able to check out information on what's happening, because obviously you can follow certain people and see what's happening with others. So I guess I kind of like reading other people's profiles on the social media and maybe checking out what they're up to and gaining information. But I don't personally want my data on there. But I guess some of that might be a bit of security as well. So I am conscious about the security aspect of things as well.
You can go on there anonymously, of course. You could just make yourself a little fake profile, you know, and just lurk in the background. I know some people do that. Are there any particular platforms that appeal to you more than others?
Only the WhatsApp, but I wouldn't really call it a platform, I suppose. And I've never really looked at sort of Twitter, and given all the changes that are happening, I'm not sure now of the accessibility of that. But I do really like the whole alt tag thing being accessible and Mastodon. So maybe that might be a platform that I will look at exploring. But again, I think Callum's very valid in what he's saying about it being just a specific VI platform, which obviously we want it to be. Well, I think it would be more helpful to have a more generic mainstream platform with VI people in there, as opposed to being just specifically for visually impaired people.
Let us know about your use of social media. Love it, hate it. Do you have any preferred platforms? What tools, which apps do you use to access your social media network of choice? We're keen to share that here on Tech Talk. You can get in touch just in the good old-fashioned way using email or send us a voice note. We always love to hear your voice here on the program. So you can send that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Stoneman, thank you very much. Tasneem Arshad, great to have you back. Stay tuned. It's Tech Talk. Some big changes to UK media laws are being discussed as part of the draft media bill. Amelia talked to the Minister of State for Media, Tourism and Creative Industries, Julia Lopez, about how this impacts radio, TV and streaming experiences for blind and partially sighted people.
A new draft media bill has been proposed to reform regulations around media on TV, radio and streaming platforms in the UK. I'm joined now by Minister of State at the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, Julia Lopez, to learn more about the draft bill and what it means for blind and partially sighted people. Hi, Julia. So do you mind briefly telling us what a draft bill is and how it's different from a fully formed bill?
Sure. Well, we've been spending some time working up a new law on some of the media changes that we need to bring forward. We haven't changed some of these laws since 2003 under the Communications Act. And effectively, a draft bill just gives people sight of the kind of legislation we want to put forward before we introduce it into the House of Commons. And that allows for a bit of extra scrutiny, allows for engagement with stakeholders to make sure that we are in the right territory before it hits Parliament and then gets all the extra scrutiny from legislators, and we vote on it in the House of Commons and the House of Lords.
And this bill would lead to very significant changes in media regulations, and with the internet and streaming platforms, is this addressing a lot of new things?
Yeah, I mean, the media business has changed very substantially, as your listeners will be aware. I mean, people view television and listen to radio in very different ways now, via smart speakers, but also via the internet, rather than just through the television. So this is going to be the first time that we regulate video on demand services, but we're also making sure that if you're listening to UK radio stations on smart speakers, that all of your favourite stations have to be accessible for free. So hopefully we are effectively future-proofing some of the ways in which people want to view, and making sure that those services are held to account by Ofcom for the first time. I think it's just important to emphasise this is the first time this has been done, and we've been listening very closely to what people need. And, you know, my own grandmother had macular degeneration, so I know how important it is to be able to have these kinds of services so that you don't feel you've isolated or left out of important national events and important TV and radio shows. So I just want to make sure that we can take this forward for everybody and make sure that accessibility is always thought about rather than a sort of afterthought.
And the bill would legally require streaming services to provide subtitles, audio description and signing. How did it work before these new proposed changes?
Well, effectively, it's up to the streamers whether they provide those kinds of services. And some of them have been pretty good, but others have been less so. And I know that that's been a concern for the RNLB and others. So what we are making sure is that they are held to account by Ofcom, who is our broadcaster regulator. And mainstream streaming services will, going forward, have to make sure that 80% of their content is subtitled, 10% is audio described, and 5% is signed. We will have the power to hold them to account for that.
And the proposed changes are also aiming to make, like you said, accessing radio via smart speakers easier and make navigating the websites and smart TV apps for on-demand services easier. Can you tell us why that was important to include in the bill?
Well, we know that it's important to be able to access services with the people that listen to this station. And we want to make sure that, you know, you can have the kind of content that you love and expect to be on a particular platform to be accessible. So when it comes to radio, your smart speakers have to be able to take you via voice activation to those stations that you want. We were getting to a situation where a lot of broadcasters were concerned that, you know, some of the big platforms, some of the smart speakers were going to start inserting their own adverts into content or charging listeners for that content. And we didn't want to see that happen. We want to make sure that the UK radio industry is supported in this new era and that the people that listen to the UK radio industry are able to get hold of all of their favourite shows.
And how about on-demand streaming apps? How will they be different under this new bill?
They'll be held to certain accessibility standards. A lot of the mainstream linear broadcasters are already held to account on those things. So this is about bringing in a wider range of providers into that scope of Ofcom to make sure that accessibility is at the forefront of some of the standards to which we hold them to account.
And what's the next step in this bill now that the draft has been proposed?
We expect it to be in the fourth session of Parliament. So, you know, we're in the third at the moment, and then we'll expect it to be introduced fairly soon, likely in the autumn.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Julia Lopez, the Minister of State at the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for the time.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Aidan Foreman is the Director of Technology here at RNIB, and in the second part of his conversation with Dave, he talks about his experience at this year's CSUN conference and how the RNIB can encourage more blind and partially sighted people to work for the organisation.
Aidan, even though you've been at RNIB for quite a long time now, I think I'm right in saying that it was this year that for the first time you visited the California State University Conference on Technology and Disability. What was your impression of that event? What did that leave you with, meeting all those different organisations, different solutions, people with different disabilities?
Yeah, so I'm quite an anxious person, so going into it, I'm always quite mindful that RNIB, you know, is a charity, funds are quite tight, you know, we need to make sure we're spending them responsibly. So when I knew I'd be going over to California to the conference, I was quite anxious that I wanted to make the most of it, wanted to make sure that the RNIB got the most out of it based on me going, and I was a little bit anxious about doing so. However, when I got there, I was just so pleased to be there, really wanted to get amongst it and really wanted to try and make the most of it. So, yeah, I mean, it further lit the further fueled the flame for me into around assistive technology. And I had an absolutely superb week. You know, there was a great bunch of colleagues out there as well. We was able to really learn a lot about lots of new tech. So there was lots of ideas that I kind of had ruminating around in my head on the way back. And it's kind of given me lots of food for thought as we move forward with RNIB. And the passion and desire continues it within me to innovate and want to push forward with new ideas around assistive technology and accessibility. And to be honest with you, it was just such a great week. It really was.
I know that one of the sort of buzzwords of that week was AI, and that you have recently spent some time investigating how AI could potentially help us here at RNIB. Are you able to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely was one of the buzzwords of the week. And obviously, Be My Eyes and OpenAI announced a kind of collaboration during the conference, which I think set a lot of, you know, tongues racing and people really excited about what could come from the OpenAI platform and AI in general. You know, it's a really exciting time. The technology has moved forward faster in 3 months than a lot of technologies have moved forward in 20 years. And, you know, I'm really excited to be a part of it in terms of watching it happen whilst in the industry and being able to use the tools to be able to try and use these things for good. So in terms of what we're doing at RNIB, we're looking at using the OpenAI engine, which is GPT-4 that powers ChatGPT at the moment for people who might have dabbled in it at home. And we're kind of building on our current knowledge bases and information that we've got to train the AI engine to basically become our knowledge base for sight loss as much as possible based on the information that we have. And at present, we're testing what we're calling internally as Chat RNIB, but of course, we might come up with a more fancy name as we go forward. And we're just testing that at the moment with our helpline, advice line, and ECLO staff. Instead of currently searching our kind of extensive knowledge base, they've got an opportunity to ask the AI engine to find them the right answer. It kind of comes up with the sources that they would previously have searched upon on the old platforms, but also it gives them a bit of a summarization based on the knowledge that the AI engine's got. We've also put in some safeguards in terms of allowing the engine not to go and kind of hallucinate in any way and kind of come up with its own answers. So if it doesn't know the answer, it's trained to tell you, I don't know, you know, check the knowledge base, etc. So yeah, we've got some clear safeguards in there. And what we're hoping for is that after feedback from this internal testing and an approach, that eventually this could end up forming some kind of customer offering. And I'm really excited to see what form that could take, because I've got a number of sort of solutions and ideas in my head, but also just how we can innovate with AI moving forward as well. I think it's got some brilliant use cases, and you know, you and I, Dave, sort of saw and heard a number of those at CSUN in terms of where people are going with it, but I still feel like there's innovation coming that will kind of change the game massively.
Indeed, yeah, so many directions we could explore here. I'm in contact with a company that's developing an add-in for the Chrome web browser that attempts to use AI to describe unlabeled images on web pages. And then, of course, there's the whole kind of ethical conversation around, you know, how do we make sure that AI is used in a way that complements human support and human interaction and doesn't in any way replace those important connections.
Yeah, absolutely. Some brilliant tools out there. And I'm really excited to see how fast it moves forward as we keep going. And I think the AI could end up becoming a real game changer where people need those adaptions and assistive technologies, because of course it could really help navigate systems that previously maybe weren't navigatable because they were inaccessible, and maybe the AI can help translate some of that. I think the future is bright in the AI space, and I'm really keen to continue exploring that.
Yeah, and of course, Microsoft looking at ways in which you can use AI to be more productive. I find writing long documents particularly arduous, so anything that can help with the writer's block is very much appreciated. So, look, Aidan, when you're not solving other people's IT problems, what do you do to unwind?
To be honest with you, Dave, I'm a massive geek at heart, so I love technology. So I do a lot of reading in my own time around tech and using the tools and kind of exploring them. But to be honest with you, outside of that, I've got a one-year-old daughter. She keeps me very busy, which is good. I've got a dog, so we like to go on walks and take my daughter and the dog and kind of get out in the countryside where possible. But also, I'm a Man United season ticket holder for the last 13 years. That might not be popular with everybody, including yourself, Dave, but I've travelled all over the UK and Europe watching them, and it's a passion that I still retain. I don't get to as many games as now my daughter's been born as I once did. However, it's still a real burning passion of mine, and I still absolutely love it, like a lot of match-going fans do.
Without dropping anybody in it, what's been your biggest IT blunder?
Oh, I remember this really clearly, actually. It's one of my best learning points. I ended up completely taking down RNIB's network very early on in my time at RNIB. I was absolutely mortified. All it was a simple networking loop. Back in the day, there wasn't technologies available to sort of prevent that from happening and automatically stopping it. You had to be a little bit more savvy and on the ball with making sure that you didn't plug in the same network cable one end as you did in the other, and kind of ended up creating that loop. And I remember one afternoon just, accidentally plugging the wrong cable in the wrong place and, completely took the whole RNIB network down, only for a very short time, because I instantly realised, hang on a second, this just feels a bit suspicious that I've just plugged in this cable and this has gone wrong. So, quickly pulled it out again and everything came back up again. But it was the best learning experience I could ever have, funnily enough, and it's never happened since. But it just proves that you can learn from the things that don't always go correct. But of course, that was a bit of a blunder and one that still embarrasses me to this day. But it keeps me grounded knowing that, we can all make mistakes.
I went to hear the British astronaut Tim Peake speak at a public event once, and a child asked him if he'd ever pressed the wrong button, and he said that he hadn't, but he had sometimes been stuck with which button to press when multiple alarms start sounding at the same time and multiple lights start flashing, and he has a kind of a sort of moment, of what do I do? What do I do? It's all going wrong, and then suddenly something else goes wrong, So I think you're in good company there, Aidan. So I think it's probably only fair to sort of balance these things out. What's the thing in a kind of an IT context of which you're most proud?
I've got two really on this. There's one personal, one work. So I'll do the personal first and then I'll go to the work one. But in terms of the personal one, it's that last year I got voted, I guess, or nominated in the CIO Top 100 in the UK for 2022, which is effectively a list of all of directors of IT, CIOs, CTOs across the whole country. Apparently there's around 130,000 IT directors and professionals in the organization, in the country. And this was something that I was really kind of proud of, to be voted in the top 100. A bit of a shock actually as well. I kind of thought my role within RNIB wouldn't be kind of looked at in that context, but to get kind of nominated in that top 100 was just such an honour and a privilege. Got to go to a nice event and kind of collect the award for reaching that top 100. Just to be clear, I didn't make the top 30 or kind of get nominated in any particular kind of top 10 or anything. But just to be present in that 100 for me at kind of my age, my sort of time of service with RNIB and, stuff like that was a real achievement for me personally. But also a real credit to the team as well, because I couldn't do what I do without a great team around me. So that was a good one. From a work sense, I think my proudest time would be the work that was done around COVID and the ability to shift the organization to work from home. It was one of those moments where you drop absolutely everything to focus on one goal, and all the team were behind the same common goal. And to say that you love doing something in like a crisis is a little bit sadistic potentially, but I really did enjoy that period of time. It felt like a real effort. We needed to all get behind something. We was all in there every day and we just had one common goal. And I wasn't leaving that building to go to work from home until absolutely every person had a laptop that they could go and work from. And I remember that last laptop being given out and the last person to go and work from home. And we was able to sort of shut up the office and go and work from home for that next sort of, well, what ended up being for quite a while, due to the pandemic. And, that was a real great achievement for the team as a whole. And the organisation really, did recognise that, which was brilliant. But for me, just personally, just being involved in such an effort was just absolutely fantastic, and it was just great to see the whole team work together on that. So yeah, there's sort of two sort of reflections there for me.
On behalf of all of us, congratulations on both of those things, Aidan, sincerely. And I know that it's often said that the real measure of a person is how you manage when times are tough, right? We can all smash it when everything's going swimmingly, but actually when the chips are down and things are stacked against you, it's what happens then. So fantastic stuff. Sort of slightly lighter, have you got a sort of a tip or a something that you could share that maybe our listeners can use?
Yeah, I mean, it might be a bit cliche at the moment. I mean, we've mentioned a lot about AI. I really would, if anybody hasn't investigated ChatGPT and some of the AI tooling out there, I mean, honestly, it could save you some time with some stuff. I'm using it more and more, you know, not to give any secrets away potentially or worry about, the kind of work I do. But I've used it a lot recently in terms of, you know, if I need to prepare for a presentation or, you know, maybe give me a summarization of a document or, you know, lots of different contexts that you can use it in. And actually, to be honest with you, it just makes you more efficient. Even if it's just dipping your toe in the water, I'd really recommend getting on ChatGPT and just giving it a go and trying it out and actually realizing the potential of this kind of space moving forward. I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of tools being created daily off the back of these kind of AI tools now. So, you know, you can create a lot of different content from them. But yeah, I'd really just encourage people to give it a go and dip your toe in and see what you think.
If you're listening to this at home, you might be wondering, are these the answers of Aidan Foreman or are these the answers of an AI? could a blind person do your job, do you think, Aidan?
Yep, 100% without a doubt. And there's no hesitation for me on that. And I, being honest with you, perhaps when my time comes to move on, that could happen. And how great would that be, right? For me, it is not a role that is exclusive to, you know, to any particular character. I think it is a role that it could be done by anybody. And I would love to see that happen in the future.
And what tips would you offer any young person, especially those of us who are blind or partially sighted, seeking a career in IT?
Yeah, so I'm going to be careful not to mention a lot too many cliches, but I've got a feeling this answer could become quite cliche, actually. But for me, it's about the progress isn't linear or a straight line. It will take many different forms. Sometimes you do have to sidestep or try different things to kind of make progress. And it's something that I've had to do a lot in my career and times to kind of, you know, continue in that trajectory that I wanted to, you know, to progress on, so sort of in that upward trajectory. But it's meant sort of some sidesteps and some moves, and sometimes things didn't go quite right and, you know, other things. So it's about that kind of accepting that, you know, it's not always going to be smooth, but, you know, don't give up, you know, keep going. Also about soaking up the experience around you. You know, for example, I've worked with so many good people. It's also about knowing that sometimes actually you can learn a lot from anybody, even if they're not doing a particularly great job. And I should just add, at R&IB, I haven't had too much of that going on. However, you know, it's just in any walk of life, if you see people who aren't quite doing things right, learn from that and know that actually that's the way I probably don't want to do that in the future. Keep working hard, don't fear failure. And to be honest with you, sometimes luck has a big part to play. On my first, you know, just a real small anecdote, but on the first day at college, I signed up to do this national diploma or whatever in IT, and they wasn't particularly clear about what sort of IT you'd be doing. And on the first day I walked in, they split the group based on when they walked through the door into two different categories. You was either going to do software development or IT support. And because I walked in the door at this particular moment in time, I got categorized in the IT support group, if you like, and I continued in that vein throughout the whole of my life at college. If I had gone in one person later, that whole thing could have shifted completely, and I could have ended up, you know, going down the software development route, and who knows what that would have led to. But sometimes it is just that fortune of, you know, getting a particular opportunity at a certain time. So yeah, I'm a big believer in that kind of thing. And also just taking any opportunities that you get. Sometimes, you know, you may have to work a little bit extra, a little bit over your time, or take those opportunities that maybe other people don't want to do, but they're all great learning experiences, and actually they'll help ground you and make you a better person moving forward. And for me, it's just about learning. You know, I learn every day. There's always something to pick up and learn. great colleagues around you, and you know, that's, that really does help to develop in your career. But yeah, as a young person today, find your way in a career, I think there is a lot of pressure to go kind of down the university route and then, you know, then try and find your way in the world of work. For me, it's not as simple as that, and it should just be about what works for you as a person. I didn't go to university personally, it just wasn't something that floated my boat. I was really keen to get into the world of work and get cracking with, you know, being completely honest, earning some money and being able to go out and do things. University just wasn't up there for me, and that didn't hold me back. So yeah, that would be my advice.
Resilience, a love of learning, a little bit of luck, a very sage advice. In an IT context, Aidan, what do you think we could be doing at RNIB to increase the number of blind and partially sighted people working here?
It's a really good question. For me, it would be about probably leaning on some of the apprenticeship works and opportunities that we've got. We've got the apprenticeship levy and stuff like that, so it may be possible to use that a little bit more to support blind and partially sighted people into jobs in the IT space. Also maybe opportunities around secondments and helping people get that opportunity. Sometimes you don't know you really want to do something until you've given it a go, and sometimes it's about maybe doing that bit of cross sort of shadowing and sharing of what does your role involve and know. But also it would be encouraging people to apply for the roles as well. So you know, I don't have any stats around this, Dave, to be honest with you, but we don't get the highest number of blind and partially sighted people applying for the roles, and it's a real shame, and I do wonder why that is. And maybe it is, you know, maybe it's something we need to look at and understand, because for me it's about let's find the right people, let's bring them into the organization, and it's not always about finding the person with every qualification, or they just need to have the right aptitude and want to right aptitude and attitude to want to learn and kind of progress and, you know, really understand an environment. And you know, we've given opportunities to lots of different people in the organization to move into IT and develop, and I'd just love to continue down that road, to be honest with you. And if there's an opportunity to do that with more blind and partially sighted people, then absolutely fantastic.
Anything I've not asked you that you'd like to add?
I don't think so, Dave. No, it's just been a brilliant opportunity to talk and share some of those stories. Really looking forward to seeing what the next few years has to offer in terms of technology and how we continue to advance down that road, what RNIB will continue to offer from a technology sense, and obviously, of course, seeing how my team personally progresses in terms of some of the tools, technologies and solutions that we've got on our roadmap and delivering them. So, yeah, I really like the opportunity at some point to come back and just share how we're progressing and, you know, what that means for RNIB's customers ultimately.
Well, we'd be very glad to have you. Aidan Foreman, Director of IT at RNIB. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Trostan Bloom is back now with his latest installments of Jaws Tech Bites.
Welcome to today's Jaws feature, where I want to explore with you together the Jaws Quick Settings. The last time we explored together a little bit the Jaws Settings Center, and I want to explain before we start with the Quick Settings a little bit to you what the difference between the Settings Center and the Quick Settings is. If you go into the Settings Center and you make specific settings, those settings can work for every application that's running on your computer. With the Quick Settings, you've got the possibility to make more application-specific settings, and also for Microsoft Office, you've got the possibility to make document-specific settings for Word or Excel or PowerPoint. How that works, I'll show to you in the next couple of minutes. At the moment, I'm in Microsoft Excel, and I start now from here the Jaws Quick Settings. For that, I press the keystroke Jaws key and V.
Quick Settings - Excel dialog, search box edit, Control plus E.
Okay, before we go into the settings in general, we go a little bit through this dialog, again like in the Settings Center. We are focused now on a search field where we can type in the name of the setting we want to change. I press the Tab key to go to the
Tree View, Excel Settings, closed, 1 of 11.
In this tree view, you can find all the settings that can be changed, and you can open the settings for Excel, for example, by pressing cursor right. all the settings in the tree view are closed by default, and I find it very nice because otherwise it can be very overwhelming to go through all these elements with cursor up and down in one go. And then I'll press the tab key again.
Read only edit. These options are specific to the Microsoft Excel application.
And also, like in the Settings Center, you have got a little dialogue that explains to you what those settings would do. I press the Tab key again.
Expand tree view checkbox not checked. Alt plus X.
And I come to a checkbox. If I would check this, all elements in the tree view where we have been before would be opened by default, so you can move through the whole elements by pressing cursor up or cursor down in one go. But I don't like this, so I don't check this checkbox. I press the Tab key again.
OK button.
And if I would confirm the OK button by pressing the spacebar or the Enter key, I would leave this quick settings without making any changes. And Tab again.
Search box edit, Control plus E.
Brings me back to the search box from where we started the whole journey. OK, now we know the dialogue of the quick settings. But how do the quick settings work? I'll show to you now. First, I press the Escape key to leave the quick settings to go back to my Excel document.
Escape my shopping list.xlsx year 2022 A1.
Now I'm back in my Excel document in column A and row 1. Now I want to show you how this Excel document is created and how the quick settings can help us to read this Excel document in a very nice way. I'm moving now down in the A column, and I can find the following things here.
Month A2, January A3, February A4, March A5.
And this is going down to December. I'm moving up now to year 2022.
February A4, January A3, month A2, year 2022, A1.
And now I go to the right.
Categories B1 through U1.
This are merged cells from B1 to U1. That's in the first row. But now I move down.
Fruit/veg/salad, B2.
That's my first category. If I would move down here, I'm now near January, so on B3.
103 pounds and 95 pence, B3.
But JAWS doesn't read out January, and also doesn't read out the category where I'm on. So I have now to move upwards again if I don't remember the category.
Fruit/veg/salad, B2.
And I go now to the right.
Dairy, C2.
That's the next category, and I have to move down.
72 pounds and 64 pence, C3.
So that's for the month January. If I would move down now.
65 pounds and 45 pence, C4.
That's the next month, that would be February, and I know now that I'm on the category Jerry. But the problem is that JAWS doesn't read out automatically the headings. Not for the rows, which are the months, and also not for the columns, which are the single categories. To make sure that I can read out those headings with JAWS, I can use my quick settings. For that, I have to focus my cursor at the right position that I can set the range for the columns. I go now up to month, and month is written on A2. You would say now, why A2? Well, on B1 to U1, I have got merged cells. If I would set the range to A1, it would always read out those merged cells, but not the real headings. So I have to make sure that I position my cursor there where the title reading should start. So I go now to A2.
80 pounds and February, A4, January, A3, month, A2.
I'm now positioned on A2, and I go now to my quick settings using the key combination JAWS key and V.
Quick settings dash Excel dialog, search box edit, Control plus E.
I'm now positioned in the search field, and I can type in the word title, because what I want to approach is that JAWS would read out those titles to me.
T-I-T-L-E. Monitor cell titles read, 1 of 10 search results.
And I now can move down through the results list by using cursor down.
10 search results list box. Monitor cell titles read checked. Mount title cell font and formatting indication not checked. Form title reading workbook worksheet and region settings Excel settings.
This is what I want to open. So I press the Enter key to go from this result directly to the tree view and to set my focus to the title reading options.
Enter, tree view, title reading closed, document setting 3 of 6, workbook, worksheet and region settings, Excel settings.
And now we hear something very exciting, because Jaws says now, document setting. And that means I can make now special settings for this Excel document where we are in at the moment, and that's my shopping list. I'm opening now the tree by using cursor right.
Title reading open, document setting 9 items.
And I now can go with cursor down.
3. Define name column and row titles override off, document setting 1 of 9, title reading workbook, worksheet and region settings, Excel settings.
The first entry is normally set automatically to off. That means if some names for titles are defined in the Excel worksheet, JAWS would read out the headings automatically. But for this file, no titles are defined, so I have to set this override function to on for the current document. I can do this by pressing the space bar.
Space on for all files, 2 of 3.
That's what we don't want, because then we have to define the column and row titles for every Excel worksheet where we are in.
Space on for the current file, 3 of 3.
That's what we want. And now I can move down with my cursor key.
Regions type indication single left parent sheet 1 right parent document setting.
Because we have only one region in this document, we can leave this as it is. And I go now down.
Title reading detection off document setting.
That's switched off at the moment, but it would change if we set the range, and that's what we want to exactly do at this moment. So I go down.
Titles read for cells right and below, document setting.
That's absolutely fine, so we leave it as it is.
Column titles to row range set undefined, document setting.
Column titles for row range not set. Here, we can press now the space bar, and JAWS will say the following.
Space, 2, 2 of 2.
Well, JAWS is saying now 2, because our cursor is positioned at A2. So that's absolutely perfect. I go now again with cursor down.
Row titles to column range set undefined, document setting.
And now you can guess what would happen if I press the space bar here. Well, JAWS should say A.
Space, A, 2 of 2.
And now we have set the range for our headings. If you go more down.
Totals column set auto left parent, no change right parent, document setting.
We can leave this as it is.
Totals row set auto left parent, no change right parent, document setting.
Also this we can leave as it is.
Clear title and total definitions not checked, document setting.
And this is very exciting, because if you would check this by pressing the space bar, JAWS would lose the settings for the range and you can set them new. But we don't want to check this by pressing the space bar. We now press the Enter key to leave the quick settings and to save our range settings.
Enter. My shopping list.xlsx, month A2.
And now we are positioned on month. So I'm now going with my cursor down.
January A3.
And I'm now in January. If I moved now to the right side.
Fruit/veg/salad. 103 pounds and 95 pence, B3.
Voila, I hear the category and I also hear the amount of money that I spent for this category in the month January. If I go now to the right again.
Dairy, 72 pounds and 64 pence, C3.
I hear the heading and also the amount of money that I've spent. If I move down now.
February, 65 pounds and 45 pence, C4.
It reads out the next month to me, but it doesn't tell me that I'm on dairy. But that's absolutely fine with me, because I knew where I came from. So that's working as expected. And this is how you can use the quick settings to make, for example, document-specific settings in Microsoft Excel. You can explore those quick settings a little bit more if you want. And also there is a very exciting thing. So If you're using your Applications menu, so pressing Shift and F10 or the Applications key on not document-specific settings in the Quick Settings, you can explain to me what you can find here. Have much fun, and we'll hear again in the next JAWS feature.
We've had an email come in from Vaughan Lewis, who was interested in our discussion about accessible televisions. And Vaughan tells us about the LG 43-inch model recently purchased. This is the 2022 model recommended by Which Magazine for visually impaired people. And Vaughan says that one of the features that is particularly popular is the ability to speak to the remote control to turn on and off audio description. Callum Stoneman, Tasneem Arshad, firstly, do you use audio description?
Absolutely. Totally love it and wouldn't watch a film without it.
Yeah, all the time. Yeah, same for me.
Now, Callum, I know that your partner is sighted. So how does she feel when you're using audio description?
She doesn't mind. I think it's been one of them things where having watched TV with me for so long, and, you know, we've got other friends who are blind as well. So I think she's just got used to it. And sometimes she actually quite likes it. I've known her sometimes just be able to sit on the couch and sort of close your eyes and switch off and just listen to it like an audiobook. I've caught her watching TV on her own with it on sometimes. But there are times, though, when she does turn it off, especially if she's watching things on her own, because it can do that thing where, you know, sometimes, especially with films that have got a lot of dialogue and they're just trying to squeeze the audio description in, it can sort of do that thing where the AD is slightly ahead of the action or slightly behind the action, and that can, that can get a bit irritating. And usually when she's with me, she'll put up with it, but if she's watching on her own, then understandably she'll switch it off. And for me, having that voice control, because you can do that with the Virgin Media box that we've got as well, you know, just hold down that voice button and just say, you know, turn on audio description. And that is pretty good because there is an audio description button on that remote, but I always forget where it is. So just being able to do it through voice is pretty useful.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that we can have audio description buttons on remotes. Very important for accessibility. In the same way that you can use a mainstream product with any smartphone to be able to have those shortcuts of triple tapping on your Touch ID or your side button to turn them on and off. I absolutely love doing that, being able to hand over my smartphone to sighted family. And just literally in a few seconds, the voiceover is removed and they can operate it as a mainstream phone. And then obviously when they're returning it back to me, I can put the voiceover back on. Absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I think it's really important to have that feature.
Let us know, do you use audio description when you're watching films and TV with sighted friends and family? Be interested to hear more about your experiences there. Let me give you this product number then, if you're interested. So the TV that Vaughan has purchased, if you want to check it out, it's an LG. It's a 43-inch set, and it's a UQ91006. Okay, so that's the UQ91006, and that is a 2022 model. Great stuff. Well, if you'd like to share your viewing experiences, let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Taz, Callum, thank you very much.
Always discreet packaging will now have the Navi lens, making it easier for blind and partially sighted people to shop. Amelia talked to P&G's accessibility lead, Sam Lateef, to learn more.
Always Discreet has partnered with NaviLens Technology to make their product packaging more accessible for blind and partially sighted customers. In a first for the category, this will make it easier for those suffering with bladder leaks to find the products they need on the shelf. I'm joined by P&G accessibility leader Sam Lateef to learn more about the new packaging. Hi Sam, so how did this collaboration between NaviLens and Always Discreet start?
The partnership began last year when we partnered with NaviLens. We were really inspired by the work that Kellogg had done on introducing NaviLens on their products. I learnt about them and decided that we needed to implement NaviLens on P&G products. We started on Pantene last summer, and the journeys just continue to evolve. This year we launched on our fabric care products and now on our always discreet adult incontinence products.
And adult incontinence is something many women and non-binary people experience, but there's still some stigma around it. How will this packaging make shopping for products better and easier for customers?
When you are in store, the hope is that as more products incorporate some form of digital accessibility, like NaviLens, onto the packs, it means that when you're blind, you can actually go and view products independently. So with a product like Always Discreet, you might not feel so comfortable, you know, asking a shop assistant to help you in that aisle. It's something quite discreet. It's something quite personal. And I think this is quite incredible now because you can discreetly find your Always Discreet.
And for people who haven't used NaviLens before, how will they use the NaviLens code on your packaging?
So NaviLens is a colourful code that's on the front of our pack. But when you download the NaviLens app, blind people use NaviLens, sighted people use NaviLens Go. I have the product. I've got three packages in front of me of Always Discreet adult incontinence. The first two packages feel very much like the Always menstrual pads. And then the third one is much bigger. I'm going to use NaviLens to see what I can learn about the products. I'm going to move my camera from left to right and see what it finds. So open NaviLens and here we go.
Always discreet incontinence pads normal.
These are the pads normal.
12 and 20. Always discreet incontinence pads long. Ahead. Always discreet incontinence pads normal size M.
So when people open NaviLens Go, they point their phone towards the shelf in the store. And then through the phone, it will call out the product name, like Always Discreet Pants or Always Discreet Pads. You can either click on that and it then tells you all about the pants product, you know, how to use it, how to dispose it, all that kind of information. And if you want to actually find it exactly on the shelf, you then lift your phone and you can press the locate button. It's called filter and locate. And then it guides you to that product. You can independently find that product on the shelf. And the top tip is to wear your headphones so that everyone in the store doesn't hear, you know, what the product is as well. So I quite like to wear my Bluetooth headset. And that way I can just, you know, quite discreetly find the product I'm looking for.
And you have the products and NaviLens here with you. Can you give us a bit of a demo of how it works?
So these are the pads. Now, if I wanted to find out more information on one of them,
pants normal size M.
If I wanted to find the pants, it tells me to go on my left. That sound means that it's in range. I'm coming down.
Here.
Yay, I found them here. They're in my hand now.
Show more in front of
that. Now, I've got all the product information related to the pants.
Always discreet incontinence pants normal. Product description. Always discreet incontinence pant for sensitive bladder offer complete protection and lock bladder leaks and odors.
Fantastic. Absolutely wonderful to use.
And this is a big step forward in accessibility for you at P&G. What else are you doing to make your products more accessible to blind and partially sighted people?
You know, it's a great honour to have the opportunity to work with a business like Always Discreet, who are really passionate and committed to making their products accessible for people with all kinds of disabilities, including people with low or no vision. You know, we want to make our packages easy to see. So sight loss is on a spectrum, then there's some people that will be able to see our products. And we need to make sure our colour contrast, the font sizes are crisp and clear so that people can easily read the physical pack. We also are introducing NaviLens on our products, so it will help people who are both sighted and not sighted to be able to read what's on the pack. They'll be able to see and select products independently on the shelf. And then when you're at home and you want to understand how do you use a product, information that sighted people normally take for granted, but for blind people you always have to ask someone, or you have to open an app that may read some information but not all information on a pack. NaviLens is going to really empower blind people to really understand what's on that pack just like everyone else. Our digital, we're making that accessible, ensuring that people using screen readers or other assistive technology can come and visit our website and not experience some of the tensions that we're all used to experiencing when websites are not accessible. And finally, in our advertising, we've added closed captioning, we work on audio description, and we're making it inclusive by bringing blind people into some of our advertising. So we have now partnered with Lucy Edwards, the blind influencer, who's really phenomenal. It's been a great partnership to have Lucy be our brand ambassador for Pantene. And it is a journey. We're not perfect. We've got a long way to go. But I really am so excited about the journey that we're on at P&G to make our brands truly inclusive for people who have historically been forgotten about, you know, people who are blind or have low vision. And it's really exciting to see that change and to see that change in business. We also recognize that we need to hire more people into the company with disabilities. And, you know, we welcome people to apply who have low or no vision. And I would really encourage people to take a look at pgcareers.com. Go to www.pgcareers.com to find out more.
And when will the products be on shelves?
So the packs are actually in store now. If they're not in store now, they'll be there in the next couple of weeks. But I was in my local Tesco and they were in there already. Please go to the supermarket and have a look and see if you can find the Always Discreet. You can go to alwaysdiscreet.co.uk to find out more.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, P&G accessibility leader Sam Lateef, for joining us to talk about the new Navilens Always Discreet packaging on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
And that brings us to the end of another Tech Talk. Tasneem Arshad, Callum Stoneman, thank you so much for your company again this week. Good to have you both here and great to have you back, Tasneem. Next week, we'll be talking a bit about Global Accessibility Awareness Day coming up on the 18th of May. So tune in for that one. Don't forget, of course, your listener emails, voice notes, always very welcome to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, and Tasneem Arshad.
Thank you very much. See you soon.
And Callum Stoneman.
See you next week.
Bye for now.